Welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Oncology. This podcast aims to bring you expert insights from a multidisciplinary team on novel immunotherapeutic approaches for non-driver mutation metastatic non-small cell lung cancer. Plus, hear from a patient advocate on the importance of shared decision-making and how to best support patients throughout their treatment journey. This activity is funded by an independent medical education grant from AstraZeneca and is jointly provided by USF Health and Touch IME. In this podcast, a pathologist and a medical oncologist discuss how to predict progression and response to immunotherapy for patients with non-driver mutation metastatic non-small cell lung cancer.
Hello, my name is Albrecht Stenzinger. I'm a pathologist and molecular pathologist and also professor of molecular tumor pathology at Heidelberg University in Heidelberg, Germany. And I'm joined today by Professor Raffaella Califano, a medical oncologist at the Christie Manchester University Hospital in the United Kingdom. And in this section, we will discuss prognostic and also predictive biomarkers for immunotherapy in patients with metastatic non-small cell lung cancer without driver mutations. Now, I think, you know, looking at the overall landscape from a clinical perspective, you know, what are your tools, Dr. Califano, that you are currently requesting when it comes to selection of patients for immunotherapy?
Thank you. From a clinical point of view, I will request all the molecular markers as per international recommendations. So all histologies will be tested for PD-L1 expression using immunohistochemistry, and then for non-squamous histology and some select patients with squamous histology, I will request next generation sequencing evaluating biomarkers such as EGFR, ALK, ROS1, BRAF, MET, RET, and TRK, and so on. And I believe when you're at the point of planning first-line treatment, if patient's condition allows, you should have all this information in front of you in order to decide what's the best strategy. Because it's clear that even if you have a very high PD-L1 expression in the tumor biopsy, but the tumor also harbors an oncogenic driver that you can target with approved drugs in the first line setting, the driver will need to be addressed first. And that's very important to make sure that you're giving your patients the appropriate treatment.
Thank you for the very clear statement. So you are saying you need a kind of, if you will, one-stop shop that offers you the full molecular makeup of the tumor to make the appropriate decision in terms of patient management.
Yes, and obviously in a clinical setting, there would be turnaround times, and PD-L1 expression, as you know very well, is an immunohistochemistry test, and it will be ready in a very, very short period of time, whilst next generation sequencing may take 1 or 2 business weeks. And also it depends if the test is run in-house or needs to be outsourced. And there will be some operational delays in order to get the sample from one place to another one. But I still feel that if the patient is not rapidly deteriorating, you should make all the attempt to have these results in the notes before planning the treatment. We know that PD-L1 expression, which remains the only validated biomarker to potentially select patients for immunotherapy, is by no means perfect because is still open to interpretation by the reporting pathologist. And perhaps you may comment on the potential differences between the clones that you may use. But on the other hand, we still use it on a daily basis, at least to decide between, you know, single agent immunotherapy or combination strategies.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, you're touching an excellent point here. And any biomarker that is, being introduced through clinical trials in a research setting needs to show that it actually performs better than what is currently available. you know, thinking about biomarkers beyond PD-L1 immunochemistry, are there any promising biomarkers where you feel that they might enter clinical stage anytime soon?
And there's a lot of research going on to try and complement PD-L1 expression. A number of trials tried to use tumor mutational burden either on the blood or tissue to better select patients for a given strategy. The results have been somewhat disappointing, in my opinion, because realistically, you can't use TMB to guide management. There's too much variability in terms of cutoff used, in terms of mutations per megabase, different cutoffs. Was the test run on plasma, which is completely different than the tumor? And also it depends on which kind of platform you're using for your TMB assessment. So we can't say that we should use, and in fact, it's not routinely recommended by the international guidelines, TMB in clinical practice. There are a number of other biomarkers under investigation, tumor infiltrating lymphocytes, some genomic signatures looking at T effectors and interferon gamma. There's a very clinical potential predictor for immunotherapy response, which is the LIPI score, which takes into account the neutrophil to lymphocyte ratio and LDH. And pretty much everybody has a full blood count and an LDH at baseline. There are more and more series coming through. Some of them are retrospective, and they give you a hint that if you have a poor LIPI score, you as a patient may derive less benefit to immunotherapy. In particular, this is for single agent immunotherapy, because the chemotherapy immunotherapy combination will confound a number of things. So in summary, PD-L1 remains the only potential biomarker for selection for immunotherapy, but there's still a lot that we have to do to validate all these other potential biomarkers which I mentioned, which remain investigational at present.
My personal, you know, feeling, but that's just a feeling, is that a biomarker, a complex biomarker that somehow you know, interrogates not only the tumor makeup or the genetic underpinnings of the tumor, but also the tumor microenvironment, might support better treatment decisions. But that really has to be shown in a prospective clinical trial, really showing clinical utility. And maybe one comment regarding TMB. I again, you know, fully concur with you. A TMB is currently not ready for a clinical setting, and most importantly, has not shown the clinical utility in a prospective clinical trial that you do want to see. And maybe there is also, besides the technical parts that you were mentioning, there is also a biological thing to it, because we are just counting mutations, right? So with microsatellite instability, we are looking at a very specific molecular mechanism giving rise to a number of mutations. So there is also high tumor mutational burden in these patients, but it is a very precise mechanism that gives rise to these neoantigens. And maybe just counting mutations in a given tumor is a little bit too simplistic to fully capture the complexity of the interaction between the tumor and the immune cell. But I would also say that, you know, with all those encouraging points that you were mentioning in terms of what is currently being explored, in addition to an ever-expanding landscape of treatment options, there should be a lot of benefits for patients in the near to longer future. And I think that is very, very, very encouraging and will be helpful also in a clinical setting. Maybe one additional question related to clinical parameters that could be used to assess response to immunotherapy. So could you briefly show the landscape and tell us a little bit about this?
Thank you. So certainly a very important parameter is performance status, and that's a validated prognostic factor for a number of strategies. You will want to give immunotherapy-based strategies to your fit patients, so performance 0 to 1. There is some data now in the PS2 population, but I think PS 0 to 1 is where the vast majority of patients will benefit. From other clinical characteristics point of view, I think there is an increasing body of evidence that show that, for example, if you're considering single agent immunotherapy, even if there is high PD-L1 expression, patients with never smoking status or light smoking status may derive less benefit compared to chemo-IO combination. And that's also potentially true for female gender compared to men. We don't have a specific biological explanation for the gender diversity, but there's a lot of retrospective data that shows that potentially if you have a female patient, even with high PD-L1 expression, this patient would be best served by the chemo-IO strategy compared to single-agent immunotherapy.
Thank you. From a clinical standpoint, how do you assess response to this therapy? So what are the major measurements that you're using, or tools that you're using, if you will?
Thank you. So from a clinical point of view, let's say you're 4-8 weeks into treatment, the patients may tell you, look, my shortness of breath is improving, my cough is improving, my chest pain is improving. And that makes you think that the treatment may be working as cancer-related symptoms are improving. But from an objective point of view, the only way to assess the response is to repeat imaging. Most of the time is cross-sectional imaging via CT scan. You may also assess the disease via MR, for example, in the brain. But realistically, the scan will tell you, has the cancer reduced in size or been stabilized compared to, is the cancer growing despite the treatment? And that will also be very important to decide if you can carry on with the right approach or you have to stop and change your strategy.
So thank you again for the great discussion. And I'm looking forward to our next session. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on non-small cell lung cancer on Touch Oncology at www.touchoncology.com. Don't forget, there are 3 other chapters in this series, so please listen in for further insights from the multidisciplinary team.